listening to the Neshot Hamayim podcast, where I talk about birth, life, nature, and the divine wisdom we can gain through it all. I'm Chaya, your hostess. Blessed is Adonai, ruler of the universe, who brought us to this place and time for this purpose. This is part two of the unassisted birth prep conversation with Jackie.
With those things aside, practically speaking, as far as like stuff that we use to prepare, is we always prepare for postpartum support, meals, now childcare, and really just might also mean like if I, for example, if I couldn't get somebody to help with cleaning the house or something, then I think I just, the house.
It's hard just not for be people clean. To let go of that stuff.
I it's think, just not going to be
for them too. And so that's important.
Yeah.
It's good advice.
Yeah. And it does suck. Cause I'm definitely one of those people that like, if I am aware of like some massive mess somewhere, like I can't, it's not very comfortable for me to just relax or whatever and rest. What I can do is at least, you know, if, as long as I can have somebody to keep my immediate resting nest
keep
clean.
That out of my field of
that
vision.
Space. Clean. Yes. Then that'll suffice. And like my husband is more than capable of that kind of thing. So that, and then meals and then childcare. So making sure, however that might look, that those things are going to mostly be taken care of, or at least so like meal prep, like I'm going to have, this is the first time I've ever done this sort of thing this way, but I've asked 3 or 4 girlfriends to come over and help me meal prep. Yeah. Do freezer meals, teas, and my postpartum sitz bath. That's like my favorite thing.
Amazing. It's wonderful. It's almost like, it's just a very, very small spa that you're going to.
Yeah.
And it also helps you have community too. You're
but
to
having all of that
talk and have really good conversations about your experiences.
Right.
And upcoming plans and things.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. I've never had it quite, I've never done it quite that way before, but it's feeling very supported, like in that community sense. And it wasn't easy to invite them. I felt like a burden. I felt, you know, like I felt terrible. Like I was asking them to build a house for me. Like it just, but as soon as I finally just spat out what I was asking, they were like so happy to be a part of that. And like so excited. And they have shared that they just feel so good that they're going to be able to gift me with like that That's time and that awesome. Support and stuff like that. So I think just as a little aside, when we don't ask people for help, we're also not allowing them to help, and we're withholding the opportunity for them to bless somebody and be blessed by that also. It's probably a bit of a pride thing. It's probably an ego thing. I don't know. I'm being trained that any need is a burden,
entirely,
you know, whatever, like so many layers, all that stuff. But really this has already been such a blessing. And so I'm really looking forward to that. But basically having the meal prep and the teas and everything ready, like quinoa soup, for example, with quinoa, bone broth, maybe some fish and like leafy greens. That's the easiest thing. You can make a crap ton of that. And that could be your whole postpartum experience, is that soup. And it would be nourishing. Maybe that's not
really
so appealing to some people. But you could make a ton ahead of time, and you can freeze it in a Ziploc. Well, you would wait until it cools. But you can freeze it in Ziploc bags. And then you just have it be like meal size, and all you need to do, like, let's say there's nobody there to support you in postpartum, and it's all you, boo. Like, just, you've got all your little crap tons of baggies of quinoa soup in the freezer. You pull one out, you rip open that bag into a pot, you go lay down while it's heating up, you go get it, ta-da, and you have your nourishing soup. These freezer meals of like lasagnas and casseroles and stuff, thanks for the thought. Not going to support my digestive system.
It might feed my husband and my kids.
Digestive system.
But, and that's great.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's important.
That way they're not
too.
Eating your soup. Right. You can eat their lasagna. But,
yes. And that's what, so that was another thing. I've set up a meal train, just set it up for like 2 weeks. And I have, and it's just dinners and it's meals that are meant to just feed my family. They don't, they could include me, but they don't have to. And that's why, it's that way everybody, them, you know, they're all taken
care of. And then you're not worried about like, are my kids eating? Is my husband eating? Like,
right.
They've got it. I can just worry about that.
And then if something's not, like if a day isn't filled or something, it's not the end of the have world. Somebody can, you know, again, like my, for me, my cereal, or my husband's perfectly capable, like, and willing, you know, that's not always the case. Some people don't have partners involved, but it's like, you could throw something together real easy on the odd days that aren't taken care of. And then the other part of it is that your freezer space.
Yeah.
Is saved up for you for all of the stuff that you need. So meal train, big meal and tea prep day, if possible, having childcare lined up, having cleaning support lined up, you know, communicating with community members or family members or whatever, to let them know, you know, if you can, this is the kind of support that would be really helpful for me, you know, making a list. Having volunteers, there are people that would volunteer to, you don't have to always pay for a doula or somebody like that. Like there usually are kind neighbors or something who would be happy to come by and walk your dog or something like that.
If, like right now with you in the summer, there's kids that are out of school that are like, hey, you know, what can I do for $5?
Yeah. We got a bunch of college kids, high school kids, kid, you know, 12-year-olds that live down the street that want a little bit of extra, you know, cash. So that's really important. Just anything to facilitate good nutrition and rest in the postpartum time. And I try to plan for like 3 weeks. Ideally, you know, wonderful if it can be longer. And bare minimum is 2 weeks because 1 week is not enough. So then pretty much for the birth, with how I birth, I'm not really a big water birth person, though my third child decided that I was. But usually I birth on land. So we do lots of Chuck's pads, the puppy pads,
get
the blue,
them from Costco,
you know, disposable.
Or Sam's. Don't buy them from the birth supply stores. They're way cheaper. Go to a pet store.
I mean, even Walmart has them, I think, because they can be under the incontinence category. So like you can find them most anywhere, a pretty good amount. I get my diapers, you know, for postpartum, the comfy ones that go way up that are the granny panties. I'm not concerned with looking cute. Postpartum,
I want to look exactly like my baby. I want to be twins.
down to the
undergarments. I want them up here under my boobs and then that, that's perfect.
Right. I have my fuzzy cozy robe, which I'm not sure how, having a son, this is going to be my first summer baby, so I don't know how into the cozy robe I'll be, but usually I have my cozy robe and my
diapers. They are so
like,
comfortable.
That's me. That's postpartum me. And then I like to have like a Chuck's pad, but washable. And I use those for a good part of postpartum. And I have like two or three of them so that I can, you know, trade them out and wash as needed and stuff like that. And those are a little more comfortable than the disposables, because the disposables, they get all, and then the disposables can get crumpled much more easily and stuff. And it's just, you know, not my favorite, but for the birth, I have the Chuck's pads. I don't bother with reusables. We have a crap ton of towels that I don't care if they're going to get soiled and stained and whatever. They will get soiled. I don't care if they get stained. Different sizes, usually just the big towels. Basically keeping the room warm. Not even just like
everybody
comfortable.
Else
like
should be uncomfortable
because
if anyone else is in the room, they should be like, it's kind of hot here. And then you know it's the right temperature. For your baby.
The right temperature. Right. And I usually have my like a playlist of some kind. I like rarely remember ever actually hearing any music during birth, though.
It's for everybody else.
So it's like, it probably is meaningful and helpful in the moment, but like as far as like, oh, memories
helping with
of whatever. I mean,
but you're not like, when you were born, this song.
Right.
I don't remember. So maybe some people do, but I don't remember.
Well, usually one of the tasks for my husband usually is to create a playlist for the birth, because he has like a talent with that. It's a whole thing with us.
He's an experienced midwife
at this point. So, yes. Yeah, I can't think of, we have the heater, we have labor snacks, and I have like this pomegranate juice diluted with coconut water has like always been my like labor drink. And then he's in charge of making sure that I stay fed and drinking and stuff like that. He's been good about taking that really seriously. And it's a serious job. And there have been times where he's appeared with snacks that he's like, these are good. These are going to be good labor snacks. And I'm like, I don't know.
He just
and
hides like, I the totally bedroom, want it. He's like, okay, yeah, well, I'll tell him out when the time's right and she'll be really into it.
Yes. And that has absolutely happened. Yeah. Like some like protein bite thing that was primarily made of dates. And I'm not usually a dates person, but that was like, that was like one of my favorite like go-tos in labor.
Kiss.
Yes. So yeah, having the labor snacks and the labor drink ready, tux pads, towels, warmth if needed.
It's interesting how many supplies you actually don't really need. I have clients that have like midwife assisted births at home, which is fantastic, but they all have like their kit that they want you to buy because, you know, they're like, okay, this is my kit. So make sure you buy it. And you know, that's not neither here nor there as far as whether that's bad or not. Cause sometimes it's nice to have something and be like, oh, I'm so glad I bought that. But it's amazing when I have people that are doing an unassisted birth. I'm like, well, you could have this if you want it. You could, I mean, you know, I give them some recommendations for like, you know, herbal supplements and like homeopathics and things like that. But really it's like, get some Chux pads if you have towels that you don't want to get destroyed. Get a bowl for your placenta, you know, get some gloves if you have anybody coming over and you know, they don't want to bare hand touch your baby, you know, but I mean, like really something to cut the cord with. It doesn't have to be anything super fancy or expensive, but if you're going to do that, it's amazing how, when you start thinking about what you really need, it's not a whole lot of stuff.
And that's definitely us. And so, yeah, you mentioned the bowl for the placenta. That's something we almost always forget about.
The last they're
minute.
On the chuck pad and you're like, oh,
this pregnancy, I'm like,
this is coming.
Yeah. We usually get emergency candles we burn the cord. That's what we like to do. We get something to tie the cord just in case. And that's basically it. Like, again, we use the emergency candles because they last longer.
It does.
The burning, because it takes a really long time. Anybody who's listening,
there's so much moisture in that. I was shocked the first time I saw it. I was like, this is a very long ceremony. I mean, it's great. Yeah. It's beautiful. But
yes.
Really.
So, and then my husband usually creates like a cardboard barrier with foil and stuff. And then newborn stuff. So like diapers, frankincense essential oil as a part of, like, if there's anything funky going on with the baby's umbilical cord.
Healing.
Like the base while it's still drying up and stuff like that. And this is probably a little bit controversial, and you don't have to use anything. Literally one drop of this combo of like jojoba oil and frankincense has just always been what we use. Yeah, we don't have very much newborn stuff either, because
you're really like the whole world,
the postpartum time,
especially
time.
In the summer, it's like, don't even put clothes on them and just hold them and nurse them. And I mean, that's your first week, 2 weeks, however long you can do it. I mean, the longer the better, I think, but at least in it's even better in the summer, because you're like, this is perfect. It's warm. I don't have to wear a shirt. Baby doesn't have to wear any clothes. They don't really need anything. Yeah.
I can't think of other
things. I think that's a lot of really good information.
Help me.
I mean, it's like, I think the key takeaways for anybody who's like planning an unassisted birth is recognizing that, you know, you're really taking on a lot of responsibility even before that, you know, like with hydration, with creating some kind of intuitive practice, whatever that looks like for you, with your own body and with your baby, and really working with whoever your support person is. And, you know, if it's not a partner or a husband, whoever you have, and making sure that they're on board with your plans, and, you know, understanding why you're making that choice, and then being able to stick with it, not really letting people from outside influence that too much. But, you know, even like moving your body and doing all these things that, you know, we like to make the prenatal period so complicated, but you're doing these things because they feel good, and because they feel good, they're also good for you. So it's, sometimes it seems like it's a no-brainer, even though pregnancy is, you know, it's a complex process. A lot of this stuff is just, it's stuff that you do anyways, because it feels good to you, or it tastes good to you. You're eating things that, you know, they taste good. You're craving things that your body needs, hopefully. But I think it's a lot of good advice. Yeah. I mean, you've done this now three times, almost four. You know, I think you've learned a lot just from doing it yourself and from trusting yourself. And I think the connection to your intuition and to your baby is a huge piece of the outside of the physical things that you're doing, you know, being able to create that trust in yourself, because like you said, you do have fears that come in, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I think people in pregnancy, regardless of what their choices are for birth, you're always going to have those doubts or those what ifs or those second guessing, and learning how to work with that. Like, how am I going to use this? Where is this coming from? Is this something I have to address right now? Or can I sit with this, you know, and always recognizing that there's, you know, time to sit with those things. Yeah.
That reminds me, I'll just share a little bit about my second. This is just an important lesson, I think, for unassisted. I'll try to keep it brief because there's so much more to the story. But my second, his pregnancy, there's a whole lot of story around it. There came a time in his labor when I felt like I needed to push. And I was in like a runner's pose, which is one knee, you know, one knee down, one knee up, but I was also up on my toes, my husband hanging from him or bracing with him, and then holding myself up on my toes in a runner's pose. It was so uncomfortable. And my calves were killing me. It had been kind of a weird labor. The whole active labor part of it was all the way to his birth was only like 6.5 hours, but it was weird. And there was a lot of, in hindsight, like acrobatics happening. And when it came to the time to push, I was in that position and it was so uncomfortable and I hated it. My legs were on fire holding myself like that. When I started feeling pushy, I checked myself just to see if I could feel his head. And I could barely touch him with my middle finger. And I'm okay, he's coming down. And I kept wanting to move because my calves were hurting so much, and any teeny tiny shift of my hips or anything, I would feel a difference, and I'd go and check and he would like bungee cord back up. So then I was like, what the heck is going on here? And the only time he would make progress with weird pushing position was when I was in that up on my toes runner's pose. Again, this is before like midwifery and all of that, like, so I didn't know what any of these positions would facilitate or anything. I just was doing what I felt like I needed to do. And it came to a point, even though my whole body was screaming at me, like it like just, stopped. You know, on my muscles were tired and all of that. I remember in my head, me telling myself, don't you effing move. Like, and I was like really stern with myself in my head, don't you move. So for, I don't know how many contractions, but for a few contractions, I did not move at all from that position. Not one tiny bit. And it, again, my calves, my legs were on fire, absolutely on fire. Holding I'm sure my husband was on fire with holding me in that position too. I'm so grateful. He's built like a bear. He's very strong. So pushed in that awful position. And the moment that his head was coming out, it was all good. The moment his body was born, really the cord snapped. Like, I was like, what the heck is going on? When the placenta came a little bit later, his cord was very short. Wow. It was like less than a foot, I think. If I had anybody else's voice in my head, or if I didn't trust my own voice in my head, that could have been catastrophic. That could have, the cord could have snapped in while he was on his way down, and he could have died.
That's amazing.
And it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, makes you step back and think about, this is very serious, you know? And I don't want to scare people with this story, but that was his story, is that everything was fine. He started realistically, it was probably just seconds longer than my other kids, but like, it took him just a little bit longer to come to. And I was talking to him and telling him like, come here, you know, get over here. I'm here. We're all okay. Like, wake up. We're fine. And he started crying, and then he, you know, it took a little bit, and then he had these, like,
probably
real good cries. And
Tim, when his cord snapped, too. Good from there. Probably, like, bungee cord, you know?
Yeah.
Poor kid.
Right. It's, like, it's the reality of the gravity mm-hmm. of birthing in general. And then, again, like, it's a lesson for birth workers and also for mothers and families that are choosing unassisted or just birth in general. It's like, this is a reality, and it's important to follow your instinct and follow that inner, whoever's yelling at you, don't effing move. If it's you, if it's God, if it's your baby, whoever's telling you that, it has to come from inside and have to be from that, like, deeper knowing, and follow that, because you don't know why that's being said. You don't know why, and in hindsight you can guess at best. So, you know, like, what if I had changed from that position? He could have been born and everything would have been, you know, like, I could have birthed in some other position. Who knows? It's the mystery of life. But, like, but again, it's just an important lesson, the gravity of these choices, and these are very real potential consequences, very real things that we face when we're making our choices. So make sure you're choosing what is really in deep within you feeling appropriate. And if you're in a situation where you're in Wyoming and it's like mm-hmm. the lesser of two evils, you know, like what we were talking about earlier, like, well, I would like a hospital, but, you know, that's terrifying to me. So I guess I'll do an unassisted birth. Well, then become familiar and do the work, whatever it's going to take for you to be mm-hmm. really in tune with that inner knowing, so that you can come to that place of, like, I am choosing unassisted. Mm-hmm. Don't let it be a victim situation where, oh, I had no choice. Okay, maybe, yes, that could be absolutely true. Now
find
make it your
make
choice
that, take
and
that
do
ownership.
What you need to do to choose yes. that. Right. Because either way, the ownership is yours. And we, I think society has this,
I
like,
go to the
pretend
hospital, I don't have responsibility.
But that's fake. It's faux. It's not a real, because the response, the onus is always on us. That's what we're agreeing to by becoming mothers, really, is that this is now my responsibility. You know, it's better to own that now and face what comes in that power than to, you know, allow yourself to sort of,
well,
like, be blindsided
of birth, and that's the reality of motherhood. And yes, it's ridiculous that not everybody has all the options available that they should have, but that's the way that life is going to be
right.
often, whether you're mothering, whether you're birthing, right. whether you're just living your life, not all the options that you want are going to be options that you
right.
have. And I don't think it's right, but I do right. think that it's something that we have to be able to adapt to and find a way to be like, okay, this is the right. situation right. I'm in. How can I own this? How can I find some sort of
right.
control, not control, but, you know what I mean? Just how can I find a way to navigate this in a way that I feel powerful? How can I find this to be an empowering situation?
Right.
So, yeah, I agree with you completely. I mean, it's, the responsibility doesn't go away just because you're not choosing an unassisted birth. It just becomes harder to see and easier
right.
to give away. But then,
right.
you know, there's other consequences that come with that too. But I think that that's a really powerful story of knowing that there was no one else there that was like, well, maybe if you try this, maybe you need to do this position. Maybe the baby's doing, you don't know. We don't know what the baby's doing. We don't know why this is happening. Only you do. You're the only one that can communicate with yourself and your baby. And that's exactly what happened. And it's just amazing to think about what would have happened had you not listened to that voice that was a bit like, listen, this is the way it needs
yeah.
to be. And I'm sure you probably didn't
yeah.
want to. It doesn't, those voices yeah. never tell us what you want to hear. They're trying to get you through that hard part.
No,
so.
Yeah. I wanted to lay, at that point, I wanted to lay down and just like, oh,
no, keep doing this hard thing. I mean, it's hard for a reason, you know?
Yeah. So many lessons can be had from, mm-hmm. you know, each kind of birth. But yeah, I think for the unassisted conversation, I think that was definitely one of the most powerful,
very
lesson-filled births. So it's just, and I don't really like to tell that story very often because I don't want people to be like just sent on a wild loop of fear. But again, it's like, this is life. And it's important. It's more important, I think, to be aware of the depths and the mysteries and things like that of life, just aware that they are there and that some mm-hmm. questions may never have answers. And that just is. And again, we live in a society where we want to sugarcoat things. We want people to feel good about every possible thing and be really comfortable about every possible thing. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not life. And how much better have we all been, have our ancestors been, and things like that, when we're willing to open up to the fact that some things will be uncomfortable and we can face them head on and be badass warrior, you know, survivalists, whatever. We can thrive even with this mentality of like shit happens, you know? And I think we're kind of in a weird place in society where it's like we kind of poo-poo mm-hmm. survivalist
yes, we all
mentality.
Seem like we're crazy.
But again, this isn't, to me, this is survival's baseline. And then we thrive when we move on from that. And like, once we understand mm-hmm. the survival foundations, then we can go on from there and really thrive.
Thanks for joining me here. Remember to subscribe, write a review, and check out the show notes for other ways to connect. Nothing on this podcast is medical or legal advice. By engaging with this content, you agree to take full responsibility for your own experiences. Everything in this podcast is property of Prudence Ministries, a private healing association.